Okay, welcome. Good afternoon. Parshas Vayeshev, as we continue our journey, we've been learning for the last number of weeks the commentary of Rav Hirsch, Rav Shimshon Raphael Hirsch, the great German leader, passed away in the late 1800s, and his magnificent commentary on Chumash. So let's learn the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, together with many of his comments. This is the Parsha, of course, in which we really get into the drama between Yosef and his brothers. All of the brothers, the Binyamin was born at the end of last week's Parsha, the 12th of the 12 brothers. And this week's Parsha begins with, we'll read it inside in a moment, with Yosef, 17 years old and already clearly not quite fitting in with his brothers like everybody else. He's sent off to Shechem, where his brothers were shepherding the flock. And there, of course, they see him approaching. They conspire first to kill him, eventually to throw him into a pit, and eventually to sell him down to Mitzrayim. And this really begins the journey of the Jewish people eventually down to Mitzrayim. So let's take a look at the psukim that describe this event. What I want to highlight in Rav Hirsch's comments, even before we begin to see them inside, is this is, like many stories in Bereishis, but this one in particular is a complicated story as we read it. And the reason why it's a complicated story is because it seems to express, shortcomings, let's call it like that, in this royal family of Yaakov Avinu together with his children. We are going to see jealousy. We're going to see hatred. We're going to see brothers selling their own brother as a slave. And that's good news because they originally tried to kill him. We're going to see favoritism of Yaakov to his brother Yosef, to his son Yosef, more than the other brothers. All of these things are attributes or values, characteristics, which we would very much say are not the way that we would think to raise our families, or not attributes to behave by, and yet we find them. Rav Hirsch, in his commentary, as we've seen in a number of different places, takes a very bold and straightforward approach to the fact that we find the Torah describing these traits in ways that we would not necessarily think they should be expressed, and yet nonetheless they clearly present themselves, and the Torah doesn't hide itself from telling us. So let's take a look at the psukim inside, and we will highlight how Rav Hirsch understands it. Let's start from the very beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. The Torah says as follows. Let me give it to you on your screens in front of you. Okay, you now have it. Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz mugurei aviv be'eretz Kenan. Yaakov settles down in the land of the journeys of his father, in the land of Kenan. Rav Hirsch right away just points out the contrast between the word Vayeshev, which means to settle, to come to be at peace, versus the land of Migurei Aviv. Lagur is to dwell as a stranger, as a foreigner, where you have no peace. You don't belong. That Yaakov desired, Rashi points this out as well from the sages, Yaakov desired finally, you know what, we've been past all the things of last week's parsha. We were past the episode of the abduction of Dina, and the brothers rescuing her, and his battles with Esav, his 20 years with Lavan. He's like back in the land. He's ready to settle down. It was the land of Migurei Aviv, where Yitzchak was always a foreigner. He didn't belong. He didn't have a place. And now Yaakov was hoping to make it into his place. And the divine scheme had not so fast, Yaakov. It's not quite time for you yet to relax. The Jewish people are not yet fully developed, and we still have this next major episode to address, which the Torah addresses it as follows. Eila told us Yaakov. Here then is the offspring, the descendants of Yaakov, and we begin with Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana Hayoroya es Echov Batzon. Yosef, who is not the only child of Yaakov, obviously. Yosef, but he's going to be the centerpiece of this particular story, was 17 years old, and he was Roya es Echov Batzon. Let's read the whole pasuk, and we have to break it down piece by piece. V'hu na'ar, and he was still like a lad with B'nai Bilha and B'nai Zilpah, with the sons of Bilha and Zilpah, who were Nishe Aviv, who were the wives of his father. Vayavei Yosef as the Basam Ra'ah el Aviyam. And Yosef used to bring these evil reports about his brothers to his father. Much to talk about in this particular pasuk. Let's just break it down in the way that Rav Hirsch does, into its component parts. Number one, Yosef is introduced as being Ben Shvasrei Shana. He was 17 years old. Now, this is not the first time we've seen a person introduced with their age, but Rav Hirsch just points out in like a one-liner in the midst of his commentary a very fascinating thing. We describe a person as being Ben Shvasrei. He was the son, he was 17. It literally means he was the son of 17 years old. So he comments that we are all actually, if you want to know, like, who are your parents? What formed you? What shaped you? Your experiences? We are all actually children of the years that we've already lived through. Meaning the years of life that we've experienced to a great degree, whether we're conscious of it or not, he says, they are our mothers and our educators. The years of experience, the life experience. So you say, who are you the son of? I'm Ben Shva Sreshen. I'm the son of the 17 years that I've already lived. That's what, so to speak, given birth to who I am. My birth parents gave birth to me physically, and then the years that I've lived have formed me and shaped me. Now, it's of course of note, as all the commentators point out, that Yosef is young, he's 17. And then the Torah describes two different ways that he interacted with his brothers, as we first points out. Hayaroa es echov batzon. He shepherded with his brothers the flock. And here they're defined as echov, his brothers. But here, Rav Hirsch points out, that's the only time they're referred to as his brothers when he was working in the fields. So Rav Hirsch sees in this line, and again, just one word of background, he comments, he writes specifically, as we read a story about a brother desiring to sell another brother, desiring to kill another brother, we have to look for cues, hints in the text of the story to understand what was the background, what's going on in this particular story. So he sees here the first half of the pasuk he's described as roa es echov batzon. He shepherded with his brothers. Meaning when he was a shepherd, he was with his brothers. At work, we were all at one. We were all together. We were all unified. But at home, it was not echav. It was not a relationship of Yosef together with his brothers. He just didn't connect with them. And he sees Rav Hirsch in the phrase of roya es echav batzon. Out in the fields, there they were able to get along. Vuhu na'ar, but where was his youth? As b'nei bilhav, yes, b'nei zilpon nesheyaviv. With the four brothers that he had, the six from Leah, he only seemed to get along with them like at work, in a work type of relationship. But with the other four, who were the children of the maidservants of Bilha and B'nai Zilpa, there he was a nar. There he was at ease. He was a child. He was a youth growing up. And they, these four sons, are not defined in the Torah by as his brothers. They're defined as Nishay Aviv, the children of the wives of his father. So you have his real brothers from Leah, never really had a relationship with them. The brothers from the two main servants, Bilhah and Zilpah, they're not even defined as his brothers. They're the wives, they're the children of the wives of his father. Rav Hirsch says, what you see and hear is the description of a child being brought up without a mother and without a brother. It's a motherless and a brotherless existence. Surrounded in a home with lots of people, but he's alone. He doesn't share the brotherhood with his brothers, and he doesn't share a mother. His mother died in last week's parsha in childbirth with his younger brother, Binyamin. So his younger brother is too young to be a companion for him. He doesn't have a mother, and he never connected with his brothers. Rav Hirsch points out that the fact that he's connected more with the mother, the brothers from the maidservants, and we see this often as, again, the dynamic amongst the 12 sons between Leah and Rachel's children and Bilhah and Zilpah's children, he suggests that it could be Yosef preferred to be with those four of the brothers. Yosef, who has, whether or not he has actual aspirations, but he has the qualities of what's going to become a leader, seeing these brothers, it could be, he says, possibly they submitted a little bit to him. Perhaps they flattered him a little bit somewhat, and he enjoyed hanging out with them because it gave him a position that he did not enjoy with the brothers of Leah. He brings this dibasam ro'oel avihem. He brings this evil report. Rashi and many of the commentators have much to say about what specifically he brought, but let's leave aside. We have much to cover. So that particular detail we will continue on from. V'Yisrael pasuk gimel ahav es Yosef mikol banav. And Yaakov, here called Yisrael, loved his brother Yosef from all the other sons. Ki ven zikunim hulo. He was a son of his old age. And he makes for him this special coat. This coat, which was marking the importance of the personality of the wearer, and it was a distinction. He clearly was picked out for some type of special calling. But first, writes, we're going to get back to this idea in, we'll talk about it now, actually. He says, this was not judicious nor wise. He calls it as it is. Chazal already do so. I don't want to say like Rafersh is the first one to say that. The Gemara says a person should never show favoritism to one son over another because of a $2 coat. The sages have a couple dollars they spent on a coat causes this entire episode and the Jews end up down in Mitzrayim, all the problems that all because of a coat. So the Gemara already says this. So Rafersh says this was not a judicious, not a wise decision that he should have listened to the tattling of his son Yosef against the other brothers. Certainly not to show favoritism to one child more than the others. And the Torah stresses the pernicious results that are shown in this story. On this comment, he has another comment. That the difference is between the sons of Leah and the sons of Rachel and the sons, he says it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that there's a dynamic of a hierarchy within a family. It should be that the submission of life to Hashem's aims that He sets for us, that should combine us all into working together and level out all differences. That's the ideal. Did not happen that way. It did not happen that the brothers were all on the same level. And Rav Hirsch comments, a nation who you see has these issues in it from its start. All the issues we're going to see, the jealousy, the hatred, the favoritism, we're going to see traits that are not necessarily the most ideal. And we are Eiz Sheba Umos, the most stiff-necked, stubborn people. We are not the most pliant of people, he writes. We have natural tendencies of Nokem Venoter to take revenge, to tell... to be filled with kinna and sinna and jealousy and hatred. And if a nation that can be so elevated by the Torah that's going to be given to us, that things like shvichas dam and murder and gilui arayos and illicit relationships are going to be removed from us, that we will become the most humane of all nations, we will become the most neighbor-loving nation, if all of that... that you can take a people like us and throw them into 2,000 years of exile and they can maintain their unity as best we can. And of course, as much as we like to point out how much of a lack of unity in the scheme of things, when the world looks at us, we are still, and we have, in truth, maintained ourselves and within families, all of that, when you see what the Torah is highlighting in the stories that we begin here, is actually, in his language, a triumph of the Torah. It's not the pshat, he says, that we were born a perfect family. It's not the case that we were born a family that never knew from jealousy or hatred or favoritism. It's not true. The Torah is actually purposely highlighting, look at the stories of your beginnings. Look at, we're going to read in a moment, how the brothers hated Yosef, how they were jealous of him. Look at how Yaakov showed a favoritism to him. And look at what we became. Look at how we've led the light, the world, in bringing morals and ethics and values to the world. That is a triumph of the Torah that we were given, that shaped us, that formed us, that took all of the natural tendencies that we had, similar to so many other nations, and made us into a people that is indeed different from all other nations. And the Torah did not come from us, the Torah came to us in his language, and the Torah's first glorious victory is in its conquest of us. And when you look at what we've become as a people, that is a testimony to the power of Torah in shaping a nation over centuries. Let's continue on. Pasuk Dalet. Vayiru echav ki oso ahav aviyam mikol echav. The brothers see. They see that Yosef is the love of their father's life. Now they're all six of the children of Leah are older. Yosef was the 11th of the 12 children of the 12 sons born. He's got his younger brother Binyamin. They all know the story that Yaakov really loved Rachel more than everybody else. And this is the son that Rachel gave Yaakov, the son Yosef. And now Yaakov is clearly showing a love of Yosef. So they hated him because of that. They could not speak peaceably in a context of peace form. There's one beautiful line here in Rafersh I have to share. What does it mean, V'lo yachlu dabro shalom? They could not speak to him in peace, he says. They could not speak to him in a way that would lead to peace, meaning they could not bear his speaking for peace. Listen to how he's translating it. V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. They could not tolerate even dabro, if he would speak, and all he wanted to do was make peace. Yosef sees something's up. They're not relating to me. There's something they don't like. Yosef, again, at 17, wasn't fully sensitive to his own behaviors and telling the dreams and the impacts that it would have. And he sees that they don't like him. He sees that they're jealous and they hate him. So he tries to speak peace. And they couldn't even bear his attempts at speak when he wanted to speak peacefully to them. Listen to this comment, this one sentence from a verse. They took nothing from him in a friendly spirit. They turned everything he said in a bad way. And most of all, misunderstood any friendly advances. And this is such a great insight. Sometimes you have a situation where one person's trying to make peace. They're trying to be friendly. They're trying to smooth over whatever might have happened. And the other party doesn't let them. They don't want to hear from it. They don't want the advances of peace. There's such a concept in which we try to correct very often in dynamics, in relationships. Things happen. Life is complicated. We make mistakes. People say things that they shouldn't have said. They're offensive. People get hurt. And then one party wants to make peace. They want to remedy it. And the other party doesn't let them. They don't accept the attempts at peace. V'lo yachlu dabro l'shalom. They couldn't tolerate his talking of peace. And that just furthers it more and more. And that sets us up. That sets us up for the next pasuk. Pasuk, hey, Yosef begins to have his dreams. But this is all the background of the dynamic as the first sees in the psukim. Vayachalom Yosef chalom vayageid le'achav. Yosef has a dream. He has a dream and he tells it to his brothers. Vayosifu od sino oso. And all that does is increases the level of hatred that they have for him. Now, listen to this. We just read Pasuk Hey, which says that Yosef had a dream, Vayageid le'achav, and he told his brothers, and then the Torah then even tells us the reaction of the brothers. Vayosifu otsinoso, they hated him even more now that he told them the dream. But then get a look at Pasuk Vav, the next Pasuk. Vayomer aleihem, and he said to them, Shimu naha chalom azeh asher chalamti, listen up to this dream that I dreamed. And he's about to tell them what he saw. Very strange, says the verse. Pasuk Hey said he had a dream. He told it to them, and they hated him. And then Pasuk Vav says, and he said to them, listen to this dream that I had. I thought you just told him in Pasuk Hey. Why is Pasuk Vav saying again that he calls to them and he says, listen, says the verse beautifully like this. He had his dream and he started telling it to them. And as soon as he started telling it to them, they wanted nothing of it. They stopped him. They said, we don't want to hear of your dreams. And that's Pasuk Hey. He had a dream. Vayageid le'achav. He told them, but they didn't even let him finish. And they began to hate him even more. And then he persists. And he runs after them. And he says, no! Shimunan, Pasuk Vav. Come, listen! You have to hear this dream that I have had. Now the Gemara talks at great length about how much value to place behind the dream. But clearly Yosef, his father Yaakov, and his dream with the ladder, and a couple of weeks ago's parasha also, there's value that they certainly took the dreams to be very serious. Let's take a listen to the dream. The dream, there are two dreams that we're going to have. Here is the first in Pasuk Zayin. Vihine. We're going to see, as Rav Hirsch points out, the word Vihine appears three times. It's going to break the dream down into three components. Vihine, he says to them, as he chases them down, and they don't want to hear it, and he sort of force feeds them his dream. Anachnu ma'almim alumim betoch hasadeh. We were all binding sheaves in the field. That's what was going on there. Vihine, kama alumasi v'gam nitzava. My binding, my sheaf that I had bound up, stood up, v'gam nitzava, and remained upright. Vihine, and then tisubena alumosechem, your sheaves gathered around mine, v'tishtachavena le'alumasi. That's the dream that he says in its three components. Says Rav Hirsch, breaking down the word vihine three times. Number one, the dream starts, anachnu ma'almim alumim b'toch hasadeh. We're gathering the sheaves, as was done. And Rav Hirsch says, what would normally happen is you would make, out of all of the crop that you had just harvested, you would make small bundles, and then you would take from all of the small bundles and you would gather them into one central place in the middle of the field. So that's what they were all doing. They were ma'almim alumim. Everyone had gathered small little bundles in their area. And then they'd begun to take them into the middle together. And then the second part is vihine, kama alu. My bundle wouldn't allow me to gather it up and move it. Somehow the bundle itself, which was related to me in my area, stands upright and can't be moved. It can't be brought into the middle. Now the imagery that Rav Hirsch is creating with this is that Yosef saying, I want it to be just like the rest of you. I wanted to take mine and put them into the middle. And against my will, so to speak, I couldn't. My sheaf stood upright and refused. Why do you have to stand upright? You only stand upright if you're refusing something else that wants to be done. My sheaf stood upright and couldn't be moved. Strange thing, says Yosef. I'm trying to be like everybody else. And then the third vihine, and then all of your sheaves, which are moving into the middle, then move away from the middle, come back to mine, encircle mine, and bow down to my sheaf. Can you imagine the brothers weren't excited to hear this? Can you imagine? As Yosef's describing, forget about everybody bringing it into the middle. Now Yosef is off to the side, upright, refusing to be moved, and all of the other brothers' sheaves make him the middle. They all go around him, and they all bow down. This, you can imagine, did not sit well, of course, with the brothers at all. Not only that, besides the fact that he's presenting this picture of I'm reigning over all of them against my own will, I wanted to contribute, I just couldn't. He says it's remarkable, first points out, it's remarkable that you should be dreaming about binding sheaves. What was the brothers' profession? They were all shepherds. They weren't farmers. They were shepherds. They had flock. And you're dreaming about these binding of the sheaves to become an agricultural people. So if Hirsch sees in that a concept about the destiny of the future people, that when the land would eventually be given to the Jewish people, as they had been promised to Avram, to Yitzchak, and Yaakov, this land. But the idea of farming this land, it's not now. These are dreams about a distant future. Why are you dreaming about that? So they understood that if that's what his thoughts are, this agricultural thing, process, then the brothers were justified in thinking that this could only be due to the teaching and information given to him by their father, Yaakov, and Yaakov's expectation. They read into this idea of a dream about being a farmer. That's the distant future of the Jewish people. They know that their father has something for Yosef, and they saw that this was a manifestation of that, that Yaakov must have been telling him and instructing him about the role that he's going to play in that deep future. And now they say, Hamaloch Timloch Aleinu, the next Pasuk. What's their response in Pasuk Ches? Vayomru lo echav. The brothers say, Hamaloch Timloch Aleinu. Are you going to rule over us as a king? You're gonna reign over us. They hated him even more for the dreams that he had. Now, he then shares a second dream. Then he has another dream. So the Torah leaves it at that. He has his first dream. The brothers hate him. Pasuk test. And again, he tells it to his brothers. Vayomer, he says, Hine chalamti chalom od. Behold, again, though, Hine, I had another dream. Vine Hashemesh v'hayareach v'achad asar koychavim mishtachavim li. He says, in my dream, there was a sun, and there was a moon, and there were 11 stars that were bowing down to me. Now we, the readers of this, already know the interpretation. But just for a moment, if you can clear your minds and listen to this dream. Yosef says, it's no longer my sheaf. He's no longer referring to grain that's a representative of him. It's him himself. He's saying, I'm in my dream, and the sun and the moon and 11 stars are bowing down to me. Now, we, of course, understand that it's the sun and the moon represents Yaakov and Rachel, and the 11 stars represent the 11 brothers. That's not the only interpretation that's forced into, that you have to force into such a, the dream can mean many other things. That Yaakov and Rachel should be the sun and the moon, it could be. It certainly is, we're going to see in a moment. But the brothers hear this dream. One could simply just say, again, remember in those days, the sun and the moon and the stars, we refer to in the Gemara, an idolater is referred as a Oved Kochavim, someone who worships the stars. That was the primary form of idolatry. So maybe this dream represented something of Yosef thinking of himself as a god, in which all of the stars and the moon and the sun were going to bow down. There could be other interpretations of exactly what it meant that Yosef said all of these things was happening, they were bowing down to me. But the Torah doesn't give us a reaction yet from the brothers. It just says, now we know that they hated him from the first dream, but now in verse 9, Pasuk Tes, the Pasuk says he had another dream, he told him about the sun and the moon and the stars bowing down to him, and no reaction yet from the brothers. The next Pasuk, Vayisaper el aviv v'el echav, he tells it to his father, and to his brothers, Vayigar bo aviv, and his father now berates him for telling him this dream. Vayomer lo, and says to him, Ma chalom hazeh asher chalamta? What kind of dream is this? Havo navo ani v'imcha, myself and your mother, v'achach and your brothers, l'hishtachavos l'cha arza? We're going to be bowing down to you, Yosef. What kind of narishkeit is this? Now, we're already familiar with this. But if you're the brothers, put yourself back as Refersh does for us. They hear this dream of the stars and the sun and the moon, and they think Yosef's lost his mind. He thinks he's going to become some type of deity, that he wants everything bowing down to him. And then what do they hear from their own father? How did their father interpret the dream? It was Yaakov who says, this is not about Yosef thinking he's some type of god. This is actually Yaakov interpreting the dream as Yaakov and Rachel as the star, as the sun and the moon, and that the 11 stars represent the 11 brothers. Yaakov is the one who says, what, me and your mother and your brothers are going to bow down to you? And the brothers hear, that's the interpretation. Our own father sees in the interpretation of this, that Yosef's dreaming of becoming a king over us, not just that he's lost his mind and he's thinking he's a deity. Our father's the one who interprets it. And that's where we then get to Vayikan Ubo Echav. The brothers become very jealous. Vayikan Ubo, we had already Sina. They already were jealous because the Torah says they saw how much their father loved Yosef and they hated him. And now we get Vayikan Ubo Echav. They were jealous of him. The Aviv Shamar Sadavar. But their father was like keeping it in his mind, like waiting to see maybe indeed this will at one point come true. Now what happens next? What happens next is a very critical pasuk. Vayelchu echav liros es tzon avihem bishchem. The brothers go. Here it is in front of you. I made it a little bit bigger. Vayelchu echav. Well, the brothers had gone to pasture the father's flock in Shechem. A couple of very important points here to tie up the idea that Refersh is developing. If you only had the Hebrew in this pasuk, Vayelchu echav liros et tzon avihem b'Shechem, you would see one simple idea. The brothers went to shepherd the flock in Shechem. One who is reading this as laning it from the Torah will notice under the second word of echav, what's called an asnachta, which means it's a pause. So that you would read it as follows when we're going to lane it on Shabbos morning. Vayelchu echav, stop, liros et tzon avihem b'Shechem. The brothers went, period. To bring the sheep to pasture in Shechem. Why is there a period in the middle of the sentence? It should have been one sentence. The brothers went to shepherd the flock. It's not how the Torah wants you to read it. It's the brothers went, period. They took the sheep to Shechem. So Rav Hirsch says, what you see in the Torah is trying to highlight, the brothers needed to leave. They just needed to get out. They could not be around. Yosef is talking narishkeit. He's talking about becoming a king. He's talking about their sheaves bowing down to him. He's talking about the sun and the moon and the stars, which Yaakov, their own father, said represents them bowing down to him. They left. Where? They just needed to leave. They needed to get away from him. Where do they choose to go? They go to a place called Shechem. Now Shechem, as Rav Hirsch points out, is about 80 kilometers away from Hebron, where they were living. That's a long journey to shepherd your flock. Why are they going specifically to Shechem? So he says it's not by chance that that's the place where they specifically choose to go. Shechem was very prominent in last week's parasha. That is where their sister Dina was abducted by the person Shechem. Shechem was also a person. He was the son of Hamor, who was the leader of the city of Shechem. The city had shared the same name as the prince of Shechem. And that's where Dina was abducted. And they tried to, last week's parsha, convince the brothers and Yaakov that she should be married to Shechem. And the brothers made a deal. They said, we'll allow her to marry you if you become like us and everybody has a bris milah. And the entire city has to do so. And they agreed. The whole city has a bris milah. And then Shimon and Levi break into the city on the third day and basically decimate the city and rescue their sister Dina. Why is this the place where the brothers return to now shepherd their flock? They go back to the city of Shechem, this decimated city of Shechem. So Rav Hirsch says because the city represents something. The city represents the place where the feeling of their all belonging together was brought so energetically to the family, a place in which Shimon and Levi spoke the words, "Hachzona yaases achoteinu, are we going to allow our sister to be treated like a zona, like a harlot?" The whole family will stand united together as one man. If one single member is threatened from the outside, we will all band together and stick together to honor and the independence of the whole as it needs to be. And therefore they said, this represents and refers to understanding what the brothers saw as the threat of Yosef. They saw that we have a problem here. And when they're going to, just as before we get to their full interpretation, what we're going to see when they go down to Mitzrayim in a couple weeks, Parshios will read, and they see that things are strange are going on with the goblet being stolen and their food and their money being returned. They can't figure out what's going on. And they say, and then Shimon is taken and put in jail. They say, you know why this is happening to us? They say, because our brother cried out to us from the pit and we didn't have the heart. We were cruel to him. And Rav Hirsch points out, as others do as well, they never regretted selling him. They never regretted that. They understood that there was they told the very end that it was the right decision to make. They regretted being cruel about it. They regretted to not hearing his cries of their brother. But the decision, they stood by always. How did they come to such a decision? So first they went to Shechem, which was the place where they had been unified, the place where they acted together as one to protect the whole. And they said, our future, not just our future, the future of the Jewish people, the future indeed of the entire world, Rav Hirsch writes, is threatened by the presence of Yosef as they understood him, because they said it was not so long ago that Nimrod introduced the idea of kingship to the world. He introduced the idea of one person ruling over, and when one person rules over, as their cousins had been enslaved under the Alufim and the kings of Seir and Edom, which we read in last week's Parsha, that is where, and what they saw everywhere around them, what they saw what a king meant, the king meant taking the inhabitants and considering them as mere bricks for the building of the fame and ambition of the dynasty and lowering the status of all of the local individual people. That's what they saw a king does. Uses the people for his own purposes. Uses the individuals for whatever he needs. It's his own glory. That's the only thing that matters. And the brother said, we have a different mission in life. Yeah, that's the kingship that we see all around us. We have a different mission in life. We have a mission of unifying everybody under the reign of Hashem above. We are all equal under that purpose and under that goal. And Yosef dreaming about us bowing down to him, dreaming about his sheaf being off, not in the center. He's off on the side. And we all go and follow him. This is a destruction of the entire purpose, the Abrahamic vision, the goal that we've been given from Avram, from Yitzhak, and from Yaakov. And he's threatening that, trying to make a dynasty of what we see all around us. And therefore, they went to Shechem, which was the place of their unity, the place where one stands up for another, and said, this is a threat. This is a threat to the future of the Jewish people and a threat to the future of the world, if we will allow this, because we have a different mission to teach the world. Now, why it is in the divine scheme that it came about in such a way that the brothers so misinterpreted what Yosef was trying to do. There is such a concept of a Jewish king, of course. When you read the Rambam, his description of what it means to be a Jewish king, it's the exact opposite of what the monarchies of the world always represent, which is this idea of a leader using his people. A Jewish king is the heart of the people. It's just the opposite, in which he needs to represent the needs of all of the people. But the Rav Hirsch actually writes the word nasi, like a prince, as the same word we find in Tanakh. Nasi means clouds. It's a very strange thing that the word prince should have the same word as clouds. And he says this for a very simple reason, because what does a cloud do? A cloud gathers all the water and moisture from the earth. It gathers up as it evaporates in the cloud, and then comes back down to the earth in the form of rain. That's what a nasi, that's what a true leader does. He gathers all the resources of the people, not for his own purposes, but then to bestow it back down to the people from whom he got it. The power comes from the people, and a Jewish nasi then rains it back down on his constituents. If he keeps it for himself, that's not a Jewish leader. So the brothers only saw one model of leadership at that point in time. The only type of kings that they had saw were vicious dictators who were abusing their people. And they saw in Yosef and his dreams that that was his ambition and aspiration. And they saw that as a threat to the Jewish people. Why again in the divine scheme should this whole event come about where they eventually didn't want to kill him and sell him down to Mitzrayim, which eventually leads the whole Jewish people down to Mitzrayim? Why was that the way we ended up in Mitzrayim? That's a much bigger discussion and a much more complicated discussion. But this is how Rav Hirsch sees how it played itself out. How was it that they misunderstood or saw in him the threat that they did and why they saw that? And with this in mind, they indeed saw them as a threat that needed to be gotten rid of. And they do. First they were going to kill him, and then there's this part we don't have so much time left for today. They originally wanted to kill him, and then Yehuda talks him out of it. Let's not kill him. Let's just throw him in the pit, let's just sell him, and eventually ends up down in Mitzrayim, and the Jewish people, of course, will follow in a couple of weeks' time, as we'll read at the end of Parshas Vayigash. But those are some of the thoughts on this opening of our Parsha, and the Shalshalas HaDvarim, the structure of things that took place, the events, the chain of events that took place leading the Jewish people down to Mitzrayim, and some of the comments on the, and again, just to conclude with one last thought, as Rav Hirsch points out, it's several times, the traits and attributes of the brothers are not always the way that we would want them to be. And he says, it's true. That's how it started. And this is to highlight to us, A, the problems that came out of it. You see the favoritism. You see what happened. You see what happened from the jealousy. We need to learn from that. And B, to see the power of the Torah that it had on this family, on us as a Jewish people, to create the people that it has indeed succeeded in creating. Okay, look forward to learning again. As always, next week, have an awesome day. Okay.